First things first, we are now joined this morning by former All-Pro running back Eddie George. Good morning, Eddie.
How are you doing?
Good morning.
Eddie?
Doing well.
Great.
Seeing you, man. Huh?
Great to have you. So much to break down and discuss from the game last night. Why don't we dive there right now? How did the Chiefs beat the 49ers? We'll take you back down to Miami for that. Jimmy Garoppolo, Patrick Mahomes, a lot of pressure on those two. Jump to the fourth quarter. Chiefs in pretty familiar territory, trailing again, this time down 10. Patrick Mahomes connecting with Tyreek Hill for 44 yards on the play. Four plays later, finding Travis Kelce. That's a one-yard touchdown. He's happy. Mahomes is happy. KC pulls within three. Jump to under 4 minutes left. Chiefs driving. Mahomes this time to Sammy Watkins for 38 yards. And then three plays after that, it's Mahomes and Damian Williams connecting for the five-yard touchdown. Puts Kansas City up 24-20. The 49ers would get one last chance to get back in this. Jimmy G trying to find Emmanuel Sanders deep, but he overthrows him deep. Next play, fourth down. Let's get this. Jimmy G. Wood gets sacked. Turnover on downs. Jimmy with just 219 yards on the night to go along with two costly turnovers. And then two plays later, Damian Williams busting the game wide open here. A 38-yard score to help the Chiefs win 31-20, giving KC their first Super Bowl in 50 years. Eddie, we expected a close game. We got a close game. What do you think? Did the Chiefs win it or did the 49ers lose this one?
You know, I was on the fence with this one. I think the Chiefs won this one. I mean, we've seen this from them all playoffs.
Every game.
Single game against Houston. The Titans, I was at that game, actually. And to watch how they did it again in the fourth quarter with Patrick Mahomes on the line, not playing great in the first half, could have easily imploded. Could have easily got caught up in the moment and really been rattled and faltered on that moment. But he was able to come out and make the necessary plays to be the MVP and find a way to win the game. So the Chiefs did it their way as usual.
Well, and you mentioned could have imploded. I got to be honest. I thought he was a little bit. When a guy has never thrown an interception in his playoff career and in the Super Bowl while trailing, throws an interception on consecutive drives. It's you were a little worried. Like, one of the elements of the Super Bowl you always hear about is that long halftime. Mm-hmm. And he went, I think it was 56 or 46 minutes mm-hmm. between times touching the ball. And the first possession where he touched the ball after halftime, he threw a pick. And it was a real process error. It's like there's a guy right there. He never makes that mistake.
Behind him, yeah.
And then, well, the second one he throws behind him. Mm-hmm. The first one he just throws short. Yep. And then the next drive, he throws another pick.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, man. Like, this is, I'm now going to have to deal with a year of people saying, yeah, but with Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what about that Super Bowl? And then it still wasn't looking great when they got the ball back. Mm-hmm. First down, incomplete. There's a false start penalty. Second down, incomplete. You're at third and 15 now. Third and 15, down 10, 7.5 minutes left. And from that moment forward, he was perfect. From that moment forward, he hits Tyreek Hill on what looked like an 11-step drop. He's just going backwards and backwards and backwards for Tyreek to get open. That was on third and 15. On third and 10, when they need a touchdown, he hits Kittle, and they end up calling a pass interference penalty. The next drive, he has the Sammy Watkins play we showed you. And then I don't know if you noticed the Damian Williams play. That was third and 5 as well. They would have had to kick. If that's incomplete, they have to kick a field goal. You got to kick a field goal in that spot, tie the game. He was absolutely perfect after, for 52 minutes, was the worst game of
his
career.
Which is remarkable for a guy to be 24 years old, first Super Bowl, and that pressure situation to come out and make those plays was tremendous. And the Tyreek Hill play, well, that set everything off. That was their first play over, 20 yards the entire game. A team that's used to scoring at will, 70-yard throws, 60 explosive plays all over the field. That was just really remarkable by Patrick Mahomes. So the Chiefs definitely won that game.
Yeah, to me, the Chiefs won that game, too. I mean, I don't think that you can lose games like this. I think the other team has to take it from you. They have to go out there and make the plays. And a lot of people in sports, you know, they have to realize that games are going to go back and forth. There are going to be momentum swings. Teams are going to face adversity. We saw that. The Chiefs had, a 10-3 lead, and then the 49ers go out and score 17 straight points. And then the Chiefs have three consecutive touchdown drives. So, I mean, it went back and forth. But at the end of it, you trusted Pat Mahomes, if he had the ball and the opportunity, that he was going to be able to go out there and make some plays, and that's exactly what he did.
Make the case, though, for those who say that the 49ers lost this
absolutely.
Game.
Listen, there were – you have a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter with the ball. You have a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter with the ball when you are – theoretically, the exact type of team that is built to take advantage of that.
Yes, would win the football.
Let's pull to your career for a bit. Mm-hmm. You guys were, and you, by the way, Steve McNair is better quarterback, the late, great Steve McNair, than Jimmy Garoppolo. So it's not like you guys couldn't come back if you were trailing. But the Chiefs are a team built to come from behind. The Niners are a team built that if we get the lead, we are going to choke you to death.
Yes.
And you were in that circumstance. And by the way, okay, so the first time you have the lead after the Mahomes pick, not the first time you lead, but when you have the ball up 10, that drive ends poorly, so be it. Chiefs get a touchdown. But now you've got the lead, there's less than 6 minutes left. Uh-huh. You're up 3. You run the ball on first down, you get 5 yards, and you don't run it again? You don't have a substantial run the entire rest of the football game, Eddie?
Yeah, and they were gashing the Kansas City defense. They were able to get some runs with the perimeter runs on the outside, hitting them in the middle with the power game. And to your point, that's 49er football. Is when you put your foot on their throat, they're going to crush it. And for Jimmy G, they didn't protect him enough with the run. They should have continued to run the football, allow him to rely on the play action game, because he was making a lot of decent throws when the play action was effective with the run game. But they got 49ers' best shot. They were able to, on defense, they were able to get a 4-man rush to Patrick Mahomes, really disrupt his flow. They were able to run the football. They were okay on third downs. But they didn't finish the job by not running the football effectively enough for Jimmy G to win that game, to close the game out.
Which is really surprising because in the fourth quarter, when you have a double-digit lead, the game is no longer against the Chiefs. The game is against the clock. And you got to try to run the football, and that's the strength of your offense. Your offensive strength isn't your quarterback dropping back to pass, you know, on second and short or third and short. You have to be aggressive with your run game and try to pound it. And you had success running the football in the first three quarters, and you got away from it. To me, that didn't make any sense. You left the door cracked open for the Chiefs to take advantage of it. But I still say that the 49ers had opportunities, and the Chiefs stepped up when they needed to, both sides of the ball, not just offensively, but defensively, being able to get stops when they needed to. So you got to give credit where credit is due. I believe that the Chiefs took that game from the 49ers.
So quickly then, would you put this on Kyle Shanahan? Was he the one that
Listen, Kyle Shanahan at the end of the first half, it's a travesty. You can't make – you are showing a lack of faith in every unit on your team. Your quarterback, because you don't want to run a drive. Your running backs, because you could have just run the ball and gotten in field goal range, theoretically. And your defense, because the real reason you don't want to even just run the ball and try to go score, you call your timeout, give yourself a minute 40, is, well, if we have to punt, can we stop them? And I thought the play I mentioned, Eddie, after the first down run, first and five, not running the ball again, second and five, 5.5 minutes left, is a killer. But I know, to give credit, Candy, you said something before the show. I think it's worth the audience understanding. You loved the Steve Spagnuolo blitz call on third and 10 because it was, you said, what did you say before the show?
Somebody's band is going to play. If you're going to blitz, you're either going to get home or they're going to score. It's going to be a big play, and they'll probably lead to them scoring quicker, which means you would get the ball back with over a minute left with the MVP.
With almost 2 minutes left.
With
down
former
three.
MVP Pat Mahomes. So to me, it just made sense on third and 10 and fourth and 10 to send the blitz, get after him, see if you can get home. And it paid off for him because they forced that incompletion on the one where Emmanuel Sanders was wide open, and then you get a sack to force the turnover on down. So to me, that was brilliant play calling by Steve Spagnuolo. Probably doesn't get enough credit, but you held the 49ers to 20 points.
Right.
I mean, that's their lowest output during this postseason. So I looked at it from the standpoint that Kansas City, both the coaching and the players executing, made the necessary calls, made the necessary plays in order to win that game and take it from the 49ers. That's why I can't say that the 49ers lost much more than the Chiefs won.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
To Tom Brady.
More attention for him.
The 42-year-old set the internet on fire last week with a cryptic post of him either walking into or out of Gillette, either staying or going, either playing or retiring, seemingly hinting at his future. Turns out he was hinting at his Super Bowl commercial. Now we're hearing reports the Patriots are willing to pay Brady $30 million to keep him in New England. Nick, would the Patriots be making a mistake paying Tom Brady $30 million to stay in New England?
Well, will it give him a bit of a break on it? Because it looks like they let him use Gillette Stadium. So he filmed this Hulu ad, and I'm sure Hulu cut him a seven-figure check.
A little something on the side.
Hijacking a little bit of the Super Bowl. You know, listen, far be it for Tom Brady's former understudy, Jimmy Garoppolo, and for the next greatest quarterback in the league, Patrick Mahomes,
to
have the spotlight purely on them on the Friday before the Super Bowl. Tom Brady made sure that wasn't going to happen. Would $30 million a year be a mistake? Obviously. We watched the games last year. We did. We saw him. We saw Tom Brady look like an average-ish quarterback. We saw Tom Brady against every good defense he faced struggle enormously. Mm-hmm. We saw the New England Patriots unable to win a home playoff game in a game that ended on a pick six, right? We saw all that happen. And we saw that Bill Belichick, when he was asked 9 months prior, do you want to extend Tom Brady, when he was coming off a championship and 1 year removed from a league MVP, then he said, nah, I'm good. I'll give you a bit of a raise and I'll remove the ability for his franchise tag you, but I'm not signing up for age 43 plus of Tom Brady, sight unseen. But now it's sight seen, and the sight wasn't that pretty. So unless it is purely about what he, you know, what he has earned through his career, which by the way, one could argue. And
he should get that.
Okay.
I think he deserves that.
Okay.
I think he deserves the $30 million for 1 year. And again, there's not a whole lot of tread on the tire. We're seeing the end come close. We're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to Tom. But I think it's more about what do you want to get around him. They've got to get more weapons around him, especially on the outside.
It's harder to do if you give the quarterback 30, right?
Yeah. But you know what? You know what? But I think in terms of what Tom has done, brought them six rings against, I mean, a perennial playoff team. He spent the majority of his career contending for a Super Bowl, whether it's in the playoffs. Missed 1 year, I believe, out of his, what?
His second year in the league was the only year they missed the playoffs when he was healthy.
Does that earn him, though, the right to stay as long as he wants?
I think so, yeah. He has more value as a Patriot than going anyplace else. So I think they need to figure it out. I think, you know what, Tom, we're going to throw you a bone. Listen, you've been taking a pay cut for the last, 20-some-odd years. You've delivered us. You made us a marketable brand. Our valuation is now well over $3 billion because of you. Why not throw him 30? You know, why not? I mean, hell, I mean, he's Tom Brady. So that's kind of what I think about it. I mean, you know, we know it's going to be a one-year deal wherever he goes. Why not end it as a Patriot?
Yeah, when you look at the Super Bowl, Patrick Mahomes is going to get paid, $200 million or whatever the projections are. And pretty average-ish performance through 3.5 quarters of that game. With
Tyreek Hill.
Oh, is he pretty good? Kelsey. Oh, yep. Yeah, they're pretty good. So you have two of the elite offensive weapons. You have a very average or pedestrian game in the Super Bowl for the majority of it. But as we look at Tom Brady and he wins the division for
they lose
the home playoff game. But now we're saying that he's done, right? And I understand this narrative that you have. And that one of these years, you're
but
probably going to be right.
But this was the year. Well, we just saw it.
Okay, well,
he's not
in your mind, this was the year, and he can't come back. But the one thing that we've seen about Tom and we've seen about the Patriots is they have the ability to adjust. They have the ability to adapt. And if you pay him $30 million, it's still a smaller percentage of the cap because the cap continues to grow. Oh, yeah. And the idea that they aren't going to be able to fix the problems that they have, to me, is what's that based off of? If anything, based off history, they find a way to consistently fix the problems they have.
But can I just say, what's the only thing we've ever heard Tom Brady say he wants? We've never heard him say, I want more money, whether he does or not. We've always heard him for years say, I want to play till I'm 45. So what's more important to him to get from the Patriots if he is going to return, money or years, at least allowing him to play till when he wants to play, which is 45?
I think whether he will admit it or not, I think given how this year went, how he played this season, I think he's starting to have doubts whether or not he's got 3 years left in him. Mm-hmm. I think he truly believes in his heart of hearts, I have at the very least 1 year left in me. And I think he probably understandably is a little irritated when he sees the other quarterback salaries continuing to jump. Yep. And I don't think when Brady asked them for the extension this past offseason, he was asking for $30 million a year. I think then he was asking for the years, and the Pats wouldn't give it to him. And now he's saying, okay, you won't give me the years, then I'm going to squeeze you on the money. You mentioned, Coach, why would they not be able to fix their problems? Well, let's go over what the issues are, because I know that in certain quarters, the issue can't be that from week 9 on, Tom Brady had a 78 passer rating. Yeah. That it can't be that over the course of the season, he had the worst statistical year in the last 15 years of his career. It's got to be the pieces around him. Offensive line wasn't good enough. Well, Dante Scarnecchia, last I checked, just retired. That ain't great. Well, the weapons weren't good enough. Well, they spent a first-round pick on a wide receiver, traded a second-round pick for a wide receiver, and used a first-round pick on a running back. I would not anticipate, it would be very un-Belichickian to now triple down on skill position guys in the draft. It's also un-Belichickian to go spend a ton of money in free agency. We talk about this all the time. They are never top-of-the-market free agent spenders. So where is the cavalry coming? From where is the cavalry coming?
So just because they don't pay top price for guys, that means they're not getting good players? And as much as they have spent the draft picks that we talked about, let's see where these guys are a year removed. Okay, let's see whether N'Keal Harry takes a jump.
And let's don't forget, see, N'Keal Harry spent a good portion of the season injured, so yes, he wasn't able to play.
Isaiah Wynn the same way.
Also injured.
And so with some time in the system where they can continue to develop, because what we're saying is this team is frozen exactly where they finished, and that those players aren't going to get better. And that's not what happens in New England. Typically, the players, because they're smart and they have good character, they get better as time goes on. And then in the draft, it doesn't have to all be first-round draft picks. Mm. We see it year in and year out where guys contribute from all different levels of the draft. So they have the draft, they have free agency. Let's see what they do to fix some of the issues they have.
What is New England's contingency plan if they don't bring Tom back?
Stidham, I guess.
Jason Stidham, baby.
Jared Stidham.
Oh, Jared Stidham.
Stidham, Stidham or
Marcus Mariota.
Marcus Mariota.
Oh, okay. No, they'll have to come up with something. They don't have a plan B.
They always have a plan B. But, don't know what plan B is.
Okay.
But I find it very interesting that we are working into the methodology, and maybe we should, that these young players, because they're young, emerging players, are going to get better. But if I say, hey, the oldest player in the league is on the other side of that curve and might be getting a little bit worse, there's this pushback there. If at 23 you're supposed to be better at 24, then at 42 you should be worse at 43. And by the way, Brady was league MVP at 40. He was good at 41. He was slightly below average at 42. I don't see a Bitcoin type of spike coming at 43. Bitcoin.
I think it was Serena or Venus was talking about her game and how even though she had slowed down some, her game had gotten so much better, not because she could react, you know, the way that she could when she was younger, but because she could anticipate where things were coming. And how they were coming, and the game slowed down. So as much as we want to knock age for a quarterback who's not mobile, who's never been mobile, the game continues to slow down, and that's where the strength of his game is.
And sometimes, though, you're Roger Federer, and the game has slowed down for you more than ever before, and Djokovic keeps kicking your ass because he's younger and better. Yeah. And that might be the situation. The GOAT in both situations, Federer and Brady, find themselves in.
All right, on to the other big game last night. Lakers hosting the Spurs, and LeBron put on a vintage performance, dropping 36-9 in a blowout win. 19 of LeBron's points came in the fourth, where he went 5 for 5 from three, each shot seemingly harder than the last, prompting Greg Popovich to say after the game, make sure you get good pictures. More now from LeBron's teammate, Anthony Davis.
It's always fun to watch him, and you know, we're all excited. We're all, you know, saying heat check, you know, give him the ball, and he was looking for it. And, you know, guys were, you know, looking for him, the guy that was on the floor. And he was able to make five, and, you know, the timeout happened, and it wasn't even planned. We all just, you know, took off and ran over there and just, you know, kind of just jumped on him. So moments like that is why, you know, we are the way we are.
And it's moments like that that make you fall in love with watching LeBron do what he does this deep into his career. Is LeBron, Nick, proving that he is still the best player in the NBA in year 17, despite
his... Well, the guy we just talked about, Giannis, no, is going to win the MVP. And if the vote was today, Vinny has a vote. I horrifically do not. But it would be...
Thankfully, do
it
not.
It would be unanimous, I think. I think Giannis would be unanimous MVP. And throughout the course of an 82-game regular season, I think Giannis is the guy you would want because he is so much younger. He does so many more. He does everything except for shoot the three at a super high level. But if you define best player by who would every GM, whether they want to admit it or not, want to have still come playoffs, of course it's LeBron. In the regular season, he's the second or third best player in basketball. We were talking about MVP voting. He right now would be second or third on most people's ballots up to this point. But there is not another guy in the league, Giannis included, until Giannis shows it to us, and I think maybe he will as soon as this year, that he can do it in four consecutive rounds. There's not another player in basketball you'd want over this guy. There's, and that is, to me, inarguable. I don't know if you agree or not. If you don't, I'm very curious who you would say, because what he does every single night is find exactly what his team needs to put them in the best position to win. If it's defer, if it's attack, if it's lock in defensively, and he is showing no letdown in year 17 after his first year with a significant injury.
I think that what you're saying, in theory, is correct as far as him being the ultimate Swiss Army knife. Like, he can assess whatever the situation is and be able to, in his computerized brain, you know, be able to give you what you need by and large. And on a given night, I think he can be the best player in basketball. Every night, I can't say that in year 17, A, there's no precedent for it. You know, Michael, Magic, Bird were all gone. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar had already started the steep decline and had Magic Johnson there.
Karl Malone was excellent, and Kobe was very good until he popped his Achilles. Those are the only guys in year 17 who've done anything close to what LeBron's doing.
I will take umbrage with you even bringing Karl Malone into this conversation. Just
okay,
don't,
fair.
Don't
we don't do have it. To get a Karl Malone.
Thank you. Don't we have to do that. But what I will say is this. If there's a game, I may take LeBron. If it's a playoff series, and I think that's a completely different conversation, there's a couple players that I may take above him, including your guy Kawhi.
Just because he brings it on
both ends. There are
two
totally different players.
He doesn't guard the other team's best player anymore. He stands in the corner. I watched him play the Rockets. He's in the corner on PJ Tucker. He's not guarding James Harden. Come on, hold on. What Kawhi we talking about now? The Kawhi that has to do everything for the Clippers offensively and has done it and has been exceptional, he occasionally will guard the other team's best player. He ain't locking down the other team's best player. That's not his job there. That's not what they've asked him to do there.
Well, here's what I'm saying, Nick. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. It's not smart to have your best player who's carrying the load do that. But the fact that you can stick Kawhi on another team's best player and he puts him on punishment, To me, that's something
that
LeBron
can do. That
absolutely not.
Okay.
Not at this stage of his career anymore. I think that's too much. That's too much to ask. LeBron is not Superman. He's not this like unbreakable figure. When LeBron was in Miami, if we're talking about 2013 LeBron, absolutely. That might be the best player I've ever seen, sans Michael Jordan. But year 17 LeBron,
defensive player. You think the Western Conference Finals are gonna be Clippers Lakers, right?
Yes.
So if before the finals, the Clippers and Lakers flip-flopped LeBron for Kawhi, you think the Lakers would be better and the Clippers would be worse? Do you think that? Because
no,
that's a series.
No, I don't think that, because the Lakers are built around LeBron and the Clippers are built around what Kawhi will be available to do.
Both teams kind of built on the fly, but okay, sure.
But you're building a team around what you expect the best of Kawhi and
LeBron. So you'd rather
LeBron
have Kawhi in a playoff series than LeBron?
At this stage?
Okay.
At this stage?
That's fascinating.
Can I ask you guys a question? Could the Lakers win if LeBron is the best player on the team, or would they need Anthony Davis, do you think, at the end?
No, LeBron has to be the best player. Anthony Davis has to be a way overqualified Robin in a playoff series until we see Anthony do it. We've got to see Anthony do it in a playoff series. He's got to be, like, LeBron, the Lakers' path to a championship, it's simple, but it's hard. LeBron has to be the best player in the postseason, as he's been every year for the last 9. The best player in the postseason. And while you're falling all over yourself about what Kawhi did last postseason, I am old enough to remember the last postseason LeBron played in, when he averaged 34-9-9, hit 2 game-winning shots, had a 45-point game 7, had a 36-15-9 game 7, and had a 51-8-8 against KD and the Warriors. A healthy KD and the Warriors, by the way, which of course Kawhi didn't have to go against. So, but that's cool. I'm excited that you'll take Kawhi. I think it's a really fascinating take.
A lot can change in 2 years.
Yeah. But let's see it.
He grew hair. Look at that.
Let's see it.
I mean, he's not believing in what Kawhi did last year.
I am believing in it.
We got to take
a
break.
One of the 6 best players in the world. There ain't no chance.
Good are the Miami Heat? Well, they're a little bit better today after getting Andre Iguodala from the Grizzlies last night. The 36-year-old former NBA Finals MVP goes to Miami with a 2-year, $30 million extension. There are also reports that the trade could land Danilo Gallinari with the Heat before today's deadline. So, Nick, are the Heat legit contenders in the East after this move?
Well, if this move also culminates with Gallinari, I think they are the second-best team in the conference. Now, I don't think anyone in the East is going to be able to compete with Milwaukee. So define if contender is, can you make the conference finals? 100%. Absolutely. They should be able to. They're right now fourth in the standings. They should be able to tick up to that 2-3 line so they avoid Milwaukee in round 2. And things happen. Guys get hurt. Guys get tight. There are things to where you now look at Miami and say, man, Pat bleeping Riley, America. This guy had a good playing career. Was far better as a head coach, Hall of Fame coaching career, and I would argue Mannix has been even better as an executive than he was as a head coach. I don't know how they just all of a sudden, seemingly with no assets, get Jimmy Butler. And now all of a sudden, they might not only get Iggy, who I thought, maybe you tell me you were hearing different things, I thought he was definitely going to one of the 2 LA teams, but now also might get Gallinari. They already go 10 deep. I don't think their starting lineup is overwhelming, but their second lineup might be as good as their starting lineup. It's just a wildly impressive job of team building and culture building by Riley and Spo.
Yeah, a couple things. Throw in Andy Ellsberg, who's the GM down in Miami, who is like the cap master and made all this stuff work.
Has the job I want.
In the what we know department, right? We know that Iguodala is headed to Miami. He helps. Jimmy Butler has been taxed a lot this season. Iguodala is the kind of guy that defensively he's going to be able to step in and guard 2s and 3s and be that type of player, taking some of the pressure off some of the other guys on the roster. So assuming that he can get back into game shape, which, by the way, I'd still like to see at this point. He's been off since last June. Let's see how long it takes him to get back into shape. But assuming he can get back into game shape, that's a significant upgrade. They are not on Milwaukee's level, though, to your point, unless they add Gallinari. Gallinari is terrific. He is a 20-point-per-game scorer who can shoot shoot the three, who can score various ways. He takes pressure offensively off of Jimmy Butler. Now, I've heard mixed things in the last 12 hours about whether or not that deal goes through. The Thunder are notoriously tough to deal with, but they are motivated to deal Gallinari, who is not part of their long-term future. So if they get Gallinari, I think they can compete with Milwaukee.
Really? Yes. Okay, that's what I was going to follow up on. Compete so you with. Think that if they get Gallinari,
yeah.
that they could, let's just assume full health for both sides, that that could be a series that we're seeing a game six of, and you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think you could see okay. a game six. I just think Bam Adebayo is great, a defensive player. Eric Spoelstra, excellent coach. He'll find different ways to kind of attack Giannis, maybe force him to be a perimeter shooter. And what worries me about Milwaukee, and when you talk to people in the Bucks organization, it worries them too, Eric Bledsoe. Eric Bledsoe remains somewhat of a concern because the last two postseasons, he has struggled at various points. Against Boston 2 years ago, he really struggled. The conference finals last year, he struggled. This year, there is no Malcolm Brogdon safety net. It's Eric Bledsoe and George Hill, who's been good, but it's Eric Bledsoe who needs to step up and play. If he struggles again, it opens the door.
And one last very quick point. Listen, Iguodala just turned 36, hasn't played basketball a year. He was playing limited minutes last year. But what he instantly adds is top of the league level maturity and playoff experience. And as good as this Heat team has been in the regular season, they haven't been very good on the road, which I think speaks to the lack of maturity. And once the postseason comes along, Kendrick Dunn, Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero have never played a big game in their respect or a real big game in their respective careers. Iggy will take some of the pressure off them in that regard.
No matter what happens over the next 12 hours, the big winner at the trade deadline is Andre Iguodala. He played golf for 6 months yes.
and now
has
on
a 2-year, $30 million
and got an extension.
That's what I'm saying.
Got to Miami. No yep. state tax, an yep. extension, unbelievable.
Life is good for Iggy right now. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.